Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to Golden State of Mindcast. I'm here with Dan Morang and David McKay, two writers for BlazersEdge.com. We obviously are approaching the playoffs. The playoffs start on Saturday. We are recording this on a Thursday evening and we'll be publishing on a Friday. So basically nothing's going to happen between when we talk and when we don't, and when we publish that will change any of this. So we're in the clear to really kind of shoot our mouths off about this fantastic series that's upcoming between the number one seed Warriors and the number eight seed Blazers. It is the number two. It's the second year in a row that these two teams have met. And I got to say, I'm pretty excited. And thank you so much, Dan and David. How excited are you on a scale of 1 to 10 for the playoffs to start? And I don't mean just Warriors, Blazers. I mean like...
Oh, all right.
Like just playoffs.
You know, well, David likes 12 different NBA teams.
Yeah, so. I'm hoping we get a second round Wizards-Celtics series. I'm at a 7. I'm pretty eager. It's a special time of year. I like when everyone's really, really competitive.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I was so switched into the Blazers tanking in January that the fact that the playoffs are here is both surreal and disappointing at the same time. Right. So I'm just kind of meh about the whole thing. I'll enjoy it, but I mean, the reality of the playoffs and the current situation facing them, I mean, it's not exactly stellar. So, and really, I don't care about the other matchups. Like, there's no real, like, enticing matchups in either conference, I think, in the early rounds.
You don't care about the Rockets OKC? I mean,
the NBA screwed the pooch on that by moving the MVP award to June. Like, if you wanted to really sauce that thing up, dropping the MVP award around game 3 would have just been absolutely hilarious, because you just would have watched those two just be just spiteful score and 40-point triple-doubles.
I mean, it's
and we
still
all just going to stand back and watch.
It's still going to be that regardless, I think. But
I think the saltiness and the hashtag petty life would have just gone through the roof.
You know what blew my mind the other day when I was thinking about Russell Westbrook is like, if he has a 30-10-10 game, all his averages go down. Like, obviously, like, that's, you know, regular season's over and all that stuff, so it doesn't matter now. But like, let's say game 82, he's like 30 points, 10-10. It's like, oh, sorry, the decimals are diving.
That's so ridiculous. I hadn't even thought about it that way, but you're so right. Yo, what
you wrap your head around that, you're like, holy crap.
Oh man. Oh, that's bad. My brain just exploded, I think. I'm not sure if we can do the rest of the podcast. But no, my actual ultimate outcome from that match, if they hadn't moved the award ceremony back, is if Kawhi won. And then they're both just like, what? Yeah, exactly. And then they both just quit. They both just stopped playing because that was the only thing that either of them cared about. But anyways, but we're not here to talk about, you know, obviously a flawed MVP award that won't include Steph Curry for the first time in 2 years. But we're here to talk about the Blazers-Warriors series specifically because obviously we're running this on GoldenStateOfMind.com and speaking with the guys from Blazers Edge. So basically my question, I actually just spent the last couple hours writing a position-by-position breakdown of Warriors versus Blazers, obviously. And my biggest question is, like, looking at all the different lineups that we've kind of seen with the Nurkic injury, who are the Warriors fans going to see in the starting lineup come game one on Sunday?
You know, honestly, it might be Nurkic. That's what they're talking about
really
right now. Is that Jason Quick at CSN Northwest was saying earlier today on Twitter, or at least he was quoted as saying that, you know, looking at it, Nurkic could be back.
I mean, I read another thing from Oregonian Live or whatever it is.
The Oregonian, yep.
The what?
Well, it's either The Oregonian or
which
Oregon
is the paper,
Live.
And the
so
Oregon
Live
is the website. Yeah.
The
Oregonian Live. I like that. I'm going to tell those guys. You guys need to rebrand. Just kind of push them all together.
So those are the same people.
They're, I mean, there's four, you know, beat reporters that cover the Trailblazers. Right. It's not like, you know, we aren't the Golden State Warriors where every beat reporter from every freaking team around the country up and uproots themselves and moves to the Bay for a year.
I know.
And then disappears when...
Well, that was the craziest thing. When we were all out at Summer League, I was talking to Tim Bontemps from the Washington Post. He's like, oh, yeah, I just got hired by the Post, and oh, yeah, I'm moving to California. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. He's like, well,
wait,
I'm covering the Warriors. I was like, oh, that makes sense. He like literally had just moved to DC from New York, and then they're like, yeah, we're going to send you to California for the year. And he literally has been embedded with the team this whole time. So
him and 37 other reporters.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel great. I feel very lucky that they still let us have somebody. Andrew Flohr is one of our great writers who is covering each home game for us at Oracle in these waning years of Oracle. But so anyways, getting back to Nurkic, which
That's the thing is like the Blazers announced when Nurkic first went down
that
they reevaluate him in 2 weeks, which is kind of weird because, you know, it's a non-displaced fracture. So
yeah, well, the time frame for that is going to vary pretty drastically. But he had X-rays on Wednesday. We're just kind of waiting for the green light.
But they put this thing out there like the way they spaced the time was, okay, Nurkic is hurt, but well, we probably should have said 3 weeks. We're going to say 2 weeks, so all your souls and hopes and joys aren't crushed at the end of the season.
I had sort of like, okay, so obviously this isn't how it went down, but I had this tinfoil hat moment when I was thinking about the 2 week time frame, and I was like, man. Like, if I'm Neil Olshey, that's perfect, because if the team can't make the playoffs without him, lottery pick. If they can, hero. Like, everything just works out nicely.
But, again, they're supposed to hold the press conference tomorrow, and then, which is kind of weird, right?
That is a little weird, yeah.
In my mind, if Nurkic is going to play, why let Golden State know? Like, what do you stand to gain from saying he's playing or not? So, it's kind of a weird situation from really any way you look at it.
It's a narrative thing, honestly. Yeah. Like, there's so much salesmanship in Portland. Like, let's not dive deep into that. But, like, it's the narrative. Like, he's back, you guys. There's a chance, you guys. Nurkules returns. Like,
oh, my God. I hadn't heard that one. Did you come up with that?
I coined it a while back.
Oh, you did? Okay. I'm all in on it. Thank you. I mean, I'm definitely, with your permission, I'm never referring to him as anything else. If he does play, he's only ever going to be Nurkules. It's going to be like...
We'll co-sign. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not even going to actually use his name. We're going to like go into like the data set or data links or whatever we're supposed to add to our stories. And it's going to be like, Nurkules. Yeah.
No, just make sure he'll just randomly yell out, I am the hero you need, just over and over.
But so, I mean, and I've heard that phrase, waiting for the green light. Like every single article that I looked at was, it said, waiting for the green light. Yeah. So, I mean, was that from Olshey or where did that come from?
Well, that came from Quick, which probably came from someone within the organization. we won't put names on it, but that was Jason Quick who initially
from said the OregonianLive.com.
Actually, he's from CSN Northwest. They have the inside access. I guess Oregon Live does too. But
yeah, no,
David, you got that insider access, man. I see you.
I got a little bit.
Yeah.
I show up at practice. I was at practice on Tuesday talking to the guys.
I mean, they let us go to games. They definitely don't let us go to practice. I'll say that much. But
oh, for us, it's reversed.
Oh, yeah?
They'll let us in the practice doors, but games are...
Oh, that's funny.
Not so much.
Yeah.
But so,
PR for a while, so...
So, assuming that...
I was doing practice stuff for a few years.
Assuming that Nurkic...
Sorry, go ahead.
No. Just assuming that Nurkic does somehow magically come back and the narrative is like, we have a chance. We're going to do this. So do we see that lineup? In my research and kind of going through y'all's season, and I have to admit, like, I didn't watch a whole bunch of Blazers games this year. Surprise, surprise.
How dare you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did watch a few. I mean, they're obviously like a super interesting team, specifically with Lillard and McCollum, but... So I noticed that after they got Nurkic, that 19-game stretch in which they went 14-5 and including, I think it was 13-3 in the last 16 games, but it was Harkless, Lillard, McCollum, Nurkic, and Vonleh. So would we see that starting five, assuming that he somehow can play?
That's the lineup. That I don't want to get too hyperbolic about the whole lineup. Has been one of the best lineups in the NBA over the past 20 games.
Right,
with Nurkic out there, that lineup is absolutely decimated
see Von Leigh do well when he has like a big boy playing with him, you know?
Right. Well, and I think that that's such an interesting, like, Von Leigh's continued progression has been such an interesting thing.
I don't even know you can call it continued. It's the fact that he's actually doing something that isn't a net zero. Like, Nurkic is, here's the rundown on that dynamic and that relationship. And David can attest to this. Nurkic is a giant human being.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He is not your usual 7-footer. Oh, he's a quote unquote big dude. He's 7 foot, 300 pounds, and he is a giant, massive human being. Well, if you want to have some fun, Google Papa Nurkic.
Oh, dude, no, I know all about it.
He's 7 foot, 400 plus pounds.
I've been on the Papa Nurkic train since day one, honestly.
Yeah. So Papa Nurkic is like, that's the genesis of Yusuf. You know, that's,
I mean, the literal genesis. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the guy is massive. So what difference that is between him and, you know, the former center of the Blazers had in Mason Plumlee is size and gravity. And I mean gravity in the basketball sense, and then it's like the literal sense. Like, he has an orbit. The guy is massive.
I mean, I could see CJ McCollum just like orbiting him just by accident. Yeah, just sure, like, I don't understand why I just keep circling you. This is bad. Just gets like sucked into it.
Those baseline cuts, those aren't actually baseline cuts. That's just Nurkic just pulling him around the baseline.
And if you look at the difference between like Nurkic and Myers Leonard, for instance, in terms of body weight and size, it's like Nurkic is 6'11 or something like that. He's not quite a true 7-footer. The 7'1. Okay, well, Leonard's 245. Nurkic is 295.
Wow.
Now, I was telling Dan before we got started here, I hadn't been at practice lately because I was on vacation, and then like Nurkic was hurt and I hadn't been there while he was there, and I was there earlier this week. And just seeing him like shooting around, I was like, oh my God. But like, in terms of pure like muscle weight, he might be the thickest human being.
No, I agree.
Mean, Shaq doesn't count anymore. He's fat.
Right.
But kind of going just real quick on what that means to Von Leigh, though. I mean, Von Leigh was an afterthought in what Nurkic has done, because it requires at least one person on him on both ends of the floor. A lot more often, it requires two. It allows Von Leigh to be productive. If you don't box him out, you got to remember, he's still 6'10" and an athletic specimen, so he can rebound the ball.
Well, and he's still young, too. He's only 22 or something?
Yeah, he's ridiculously young, because he came in the league barely a pup. He was still 18 when he was drafted, because he was so young going into college.
Didn't he have like 20 rebounds last night?
Set a career high last night with 19. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
So he's got that confidence now, and now he's rebounding, and his scoring isn't spectacular. It's not like he's scoring like he was in Indiana, but he's being effective on both ends because of his quickness and his athleticism, and he's being freed up by all the space that Nurkic creates. So that dynamic for Portland is huge.
So, I mean, you think that dynamic is completely negated when Myers is on the floor?
Yeah, so, I mean, really the difference between Nurkic and a guy like Myers Leonard is Nurkic just takes up so much space. It requires at least one person, more often than not, it requires two, because he's just legit that big. And that's been a huge boon for a guy like Noah Vonleh, who's able to step in there and fill the space on the backside, both on the offense and defensive sides. Offensively, you know, Blazers are running pick and rolls that make sense because rim. And it's not diving like Mason Plumlee. Mason Plumlee was a threat, you know, in the basic loose definition of the word, but Nurkic, he's a true threat. When he goes to the rim, he's going to dunk on you. So defenses are sagging more towards him. His gravity is that much stronger in the basketball sense. And that leaves a guy like Vonleh wide open for the little drop-off dunk. He's free on offensive rebounds. I mean, you look at his rebounding totals over the last, you know, really since Nurkic has arrived, his numbers have skyrocketed. And it's not just this kind of loose correlation. It's a direct correlation between those two guys.
Right. Wasn't Vonleh playing on the Summer League team when we were there last summer?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a travesty.
It was. Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that and just thinking, like, man, this is sad. Like, I remember this guy had so much hype, and, like, this is just kind of painful to watch. I mean, it wasn't as painful as watching Thabit, you know, years later playing at Summer League. Like, and then he, like, got in a tiff and went back and, like, broke a chair or whatever. Like, that was actually painful to watch. But this was bordering on, like, man, I mean, I know this kid is still really young, but this is bad. Like, I just don't get where he goes from here. And so just the arrival of Nurkic and the somehow ascension of him into his sort of like body and natural talents, I mean, it just seems like such an interesting storyline. And I know you've already talked about like thread and narrative kind of running Portland, but like, do people, I mean, are you completely 100% contributing that to Nurkic's arrival, or is that somehow like something that he could carry on? I mean, obviously it hasn't happened quite yet with Myers, or like, I mean, is that something that you see moving forward next year? Or, I don't know. I'm so curious about that dynamic.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, I'm just I'm curious. Do you think that the gains that you see Vonleh making now, do you think that he could be able to continue that, like moving forward into his, you know, year 23, year 24 age?
Seasons, yeah, for sure.
But is that only dependent on Nurkic being next to him?
Well, I mean, a little from column A, a little from column B. He's going to keep getting better. Having Nurkic there makes him better almost automatically. But like he's really kind of found his comfort zone. He's starting to play really well, and especially on the glass. But there was an article that I need to parse through from Cody Sherritt earlier today about Vonleh really becoming the player that he's going to be. And Nurkic is a big part of that, but I think honestly, if like let's say, you know, God forbid or whatever, knock on wood, Nurkic goes down and he succumbs to the tragic Portland curse with centers.
You had to go there.
I didn't even do it, man. I'm sorry. I was thinking it, but I wasn't. You know,
it's unavoidable, dude. It really is.
It underlines everything in Portland history. But at any rate, you know, you put Vonleh out there. He's still going to be better next year than he was at the start of this season, even if Nurkic isn't there with him.
My whole take on it is that Nurkic unlocked what he could be.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was the real thing. It's like, if you were going to build a power forward in a lab, he would come out looking like Noah Vonleh. Yeah. He's 6'10". He's absolutely jacked. Incredibly nimble feet. He can guard out on the perimeter. He's got the natural instincts to rebound.
It'd be nice if he had touch, though.
That's the thing. Is everything about him screams athletic power and finishing ability. And you see everything that just looks really nice. Like the entire basketball package looks fantastic. And then you see him around the rim. If it's not a dunk, it's the most god-awful touch you've ever seen.
Well, that's why it's so nice to have Nurk, like, allowing him to get those little dunks. Because, like, I remember watching Vonleh specifically last season and see, like, his footwork. He's doing so great. He gets to the rim. He kind of cuts through, and he lays it up, and it's just, like, 6 inches high. Other side, it's, like, on the wrong side of the box.
And it, like, comes off the rim hard on a layup.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the weird thing. You're just like, how does, like... And if you watch him shoot his jumper, he like it's a very nice, compact, big man jumper. And everything looks really nice. You would expect it to have a nice touch because it's a nice follow through. It's a smooth release. When it hits anything other than the bottom of the net, you have no idea where it's ending up. And the thing is, like, you're in Portland, you're just used to that because outside of Dame and CJ, there's so many guys that are just inconsistent shooters. You've got Aminu, you've got Harkless. Leonard,
I like Crab shot sometimes.
Crab shot aesthetically is awful. Like everything about it is just goofy as can be.
No, but I mean it goes. Yeah,
for sure. Like he finished what third in the NBA in 3-point percentage this year among qualifying players. Like he shot 44%. He's a
knockdown shooter.
Really great shooter. Fantastic. But like to Dan's point, like his form isn't like properly textbook.
Yeah, you know, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
You got elbow to the east, the other to the west.
I'm of the Lonzo big baller school of thought that if it goes down and people can't block it, then like, you know, ball till it gets big or whatever their catchphrase is. I don't think I've actually learned yet, but
I've been ignoring LeVar Ball for as long as possible.
I did not say LeVar. I was only talking about his progeny, but
Oh, does he have a son?
You know, it'd be. I'm not even going to go there. You know what? I'm going to shoot.
You open that door, man. I'm going to kick it in.
But okay, so like, if we're talking about shooting form, not to go off on a tangent, but
please, dude, tangents are what we do here at Golden State Mycast. Also, just real quick, while going off on a tangent, I just want to add that obviously to our trusted respected listeners, Ivan and Nate are obviously both not here tonight because they're a bunch of little bitches and they decided that they were too busy with other things to come on. But
hey, excuse me, Captain Too Busy. We did a podcast last time with you guys where you and Nate dipped out. So that's Nate is now 0 for 2. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
And now we know we can swear on here, so I can share an Evan Turner quote when it's time.
Yeah, we can swear. I mean, like, sometimes I'll edit out the F word, but you just go right ahead and say it, and then I'll try to track it down. And if I get too lazy, it'll just stay in there. Because, like, we're really not too worried. Again, like, for people who are listening, we got Dan Morang and David McKay, both from Blazers Edge. And we were talking about LeVar Ball, unfortunately, and we shouldn't talk about that anymore. You were just about to relay a tangent on something, and then I actually tangented enough on you. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that, like, when you're looking at prospects coming out of college, if they have a broke shot and it goes down, it's less concerning than if someone has a great form, just like great shot, and they can't get it to drop. Because you can kind of, yeah, you can fix one and not the other.
Well, and no. I think you either have. I mean, this is going to sound so new agey. Oh, my Lord. But I feel like sometimes in your heart, you know it's going to go down and your heart guides the ball into the hoop. And like you can only ever improve on that. But if your heart doesn't know what it feels like to succeed, then your heart is like forever just going to be a cold wasteland of brick shots.
I need to watch some Yu-Gi-Oh! Now and trust the heart of the card.
is that a discussion in Golden State, like the difference between, you know, textbook clay jumper and Steph's wild, like, 12-year-old kid heave?
I mean, it's a conversation only as so far as it's like, wow, this is cool. I mean, it's not like, I remember
Steph's,
like,
is, to be blunt, it's just the most whack thing that you've ever seen from a consistent shooter. Like,
who's jumping?
Steph's.
Steph?
Yeah, I mean, he looks like a 12-year-old throwing a ball that's too big for him.
Well, I mean, did you see him in college? He looked like 11-year-old. So now he looks like a 13-year-old. And
it's just so crazy that to me that the greatest shooter in NBA history has got a jumper that crazy. Because if you look at every other guy that's on that list, the Steve Nashes of the world, the Mark Prices of the world, J.J. Redick, Ray Allen, every one of these guys has got – like a textbook pure.
So two points. Nobody is on the list that Steph is on. Point one. The list of which you speak is a different list. Point two is that he definitely did sort of have to develop that from being so tiny and like just heaving from his chest. But then he realized that he could get it off faster from like actually sort of a lower release point. And he comes out of his crouch and he gets it up and he has such a high arc on it because he has to shoot it over players that have always traditionally been much larger than him from grade ever since kindergarten until now. He's always been the smallest dude. And so I think it's just like a natural output of his adapting to his physical limitations and yet at the same time having the heart of a champion again that will guide the ball into the basket, so to speak.
I can just see, like, in my head, I can see, like, Aminu when he has that trebuchet just, cock, like, locked, cocked ready to go. He's like, heart of the cards, come on, drop.
If Golden State Warriors fans are looking for something other than, you know, the sacrificial lamb that is the Portland Trailblazers in the first round, watch Aminu and Evan Turner's jumpers. And, like, it's just The way that I've described Evan Turner's jumper, because it's like a fun drinking game, it's like a trebuchet that breaks down mid-launch. Like it loads up and then
which guy are we talking about?
Turner. Like when it gets to like halfway up, it's like the trebuchet breaks and all of a sudden it just stops and then falls forward. Like there's no way to explain. It's like a three-piece jumper. It's got as many pieces to it as a nice tuxedo.
Well, see, that's the thing with Aminos is it's definitely not a broken trebuchet. It's just like a really tightly
wound, completely just folded.
Just gonna sling. And I actually spent a fair bit of time like studying his jumper because he'll stay, jumper. Yeah, he'll stay after practice and work on threes.
I have a question. How does that make you feel about your life?
Oh man.
Or is that too? Is it too soon?
We don't need that to make me feel about my life.
Do you have the heart of a champion, David? Do you have the heart of a champion
in a jar somewhere? I'm sure.
So this is actually one of the questions that I actually wrote down because, again, we are very professional and we plan all this stuff out ahead of time. But for how are the Harkless Aminu rotations going to work out? And I guess you could kind of throw Turner in there, although he's not really like a forward per se. But that sort of triumvirate, like, but especially Harkless Aminu, like, what sort of rotations are we dealing with from Terry Stotts' perspective?
Harkless and Aminu are going to get a lot of time on the floor. I would assume that Harkless gets first dibs on Durant. That would be but I know from Stotts' past that he likes to give Durant as many looks as possible. So it'll be Harkless and Aminu a ton. Turner will take some time on him. That's undoubted.
Well, Turner plays some three, right?
Yeah, I mean, Turner's 6'7".
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
He's a big dude.
I wouldn't be surprised to have Terry put Turner on Steph, to be honest.
Just for when he runs around, yeah.
But then where are they putting Lillard and McCollum?
They'll put Lillard on Clay.
Yeah. And where's Clay McCollum going?
Clay's not going to take him off the bounce. I mean, and he's not going to
post Clay's also up, not so. Taking people off the bounce in general, though. I mean, he's...
That's what I mean. So yeah. But McCollum is bigger and moves his feet better through screens than Lillard does.
Yeah.
So
what is Lillard like, 6'2" or something?
6'1".
Yeah, six probably one. Like 6'1".
Yeah. They're listed. Dame's listed at 6'3", and I think CJ's listed at 6'4" or 6'5". It's one or the other.
But they're like the same.
Well, CJ. Okay, so in real life, CJ's like 6'3", I think.
Yeah.
Dame's like 6'1". Shabazz is like 5'9".
5'11".
No, he's almost 6 feet tall, probably. He's I think size. I'm taller than him.
Yeah, he's my size. Yeah.
Well, David, you're what? I mean, you're 6'1"?
Yeah, between 6 and 6'1".
Yeah. And Dan, you're about the same?
I'm just shorter than David. Yeah, I'm just under 6 foot tall. So, but build wise here, we're a little bit different.
He's got a few pounds on me. He likes to play the old power forward. I like to play the old ragdoll.
That would work better if Dan liked to play the power bottom.
But oh god! Very professional podcast. Yes. Super. Yes. Let me put my tie back on here.
Yeah. No. With the way that lineup's going to work out, I as crazy as it seems. I don't think Portland's going to worry about Steph and Clay as much as they are about KD, because KD's been the one that's just absolutely – I think he averaged like 30, 10, and 7 or something like that against Portland this year. Like, Steph and Clay are going to get theirs and go nuts, but I mean, KD has just been a nightmare. And if they're going to have any kind of chance, that's the guy that they have to try to keep from going absolutely crazy.
But see, there's part of me, and this is kind of messed up for me even to say this, but there's part of me that thinks the Blazers might be game planning to like try to get KD to go off by himself and think that he has to play hero ball because the Warriors in their last...
Because he's the isolation guy. Yeah,
he's the ISO guy. And so then like if he starts ISOing in a continuous sort of manner, like everything that they do that will win them a championship gets thrown by the wayside. And not that I'm totally against KD ISOing at certain points, but like, and I'm one of the assholes who was like, when he went out, I was the guy saying like, are they better right now? And I mean, the answer is definitely no.
Then he came back and you're like, nope, I'm totally wrong.
Well, no, but you know, I mean, the loss of the Jazz and I just, they're still trying to find their identity. And like, unfortunately, I think that it's a really hard time to try to find your identity. And when he went out, they actually not immediately, but it took about 5 to 10 games or so, but they reverted back to the 2014-2015 Warriors that ended up winning the championship that were led by a fearless Steph Curry. And it was a gritty, you know, defensive minded Draymond Green who stepped in and like took over the defensive liability or the defensive, sort of hole that KD had left. And I mean, they won 14 games in a row and they were like blowing people out. I mean, It was so reminiscent of, you know.
I will tell you this. Blazer fans, if there's anything that they're going to take solace and joy from in this series, if Nurkic plays, it is going to be watching Nurkic stuff Draymond Green in a hoop endlessly over and over and over and over again. Because as good as Draymond is defensively, and he is phenomenal, he can there is no possible way he can handle him possession after possession.
Well, but no, but he's not. I mean, he's not playing center. Like, I mean, Zaza. Well, would be going. I mean, Zaza. Also, the Zaza Nurkic. If that happens, that's going to be like the most beastly matchup of the postseason.
I'm hoping that Kerr thinks that he can go small ball against Nurkic, and that puts either Durant or Draymond on Nurkic, because it's going to be hilarious.
I don't think that he will. I think that they'll only go small ball against like Myers Leonard. I don't know. I don't necessarily see them like trying to, and especially like asking so much out of Draymond. I mean, like you said, Nurkic is huge. Draymond is very not that big. I mean, you were talking earlier about how Vonleh is like the prototypical power forward. You know, he's 6'10",
6'11". Massive compared
he's
to
massive. Draymond is like Draymond. You're talking about in real life. I mean, I think Draymond is listed at 6'8" or something. He's like legitimately 6'6" in shoes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He just has this insane like center of gravity where he can stop guys. And
in a 7'1" wingspan.
Yes, exactly. And he can cover 1 through 5, and he can do all this stuff. Like, you're not going to see Draymond cover Shaq in his prime, you know? And the closest that we sort of have right now.
I would love to see that just because I'm a masochist.
I would like to see that just purely if one of or both of them were mic'd up, and then I could listen to the conversation.
Like, Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, I would watch the game, too, obviously, just to see Shaq. Like, it would be bad. But, you know, it's a different world now, and Draymond can get away with playing the five. I mean,
that's the thing. That's the Blazers' wild card, really. And I have no, you know, false ambitions about the Blazers winning this series. But there's going to be a game in this series if Nurkic plays. If he plays from game one and he's healthy and ready to go and playing 30 minutes a night, there is going to be a game in this series where Golden State can do nothing to stop him.
Right.
I mean, that's just a reality. They don't have the personnel. They just like Zaza. Unless Golden State's willing to play Zaza 30 plus minutes, and let's be honest, you guys don't want to see Zaza on the floor for 30 plus minutes.
So I have a question. So last year, obviously, it was 4-1. Game three, Dame went off for 40 points and 10 rebounds or 10 assists. Could you see a situation similar actually to last year when Steph then came back in game four and went off for a bunch of points and
I'm sorry, I don't remember that game.
And in if I remember correctly, an NBA record of 17 points in the overtime period.
Single-handedly outscoring the Blazers in an overtime period. Yeah.
But not the Steph game, the Dame game specifically, game three. Could you see somehow maybe they hold them out the first two games, the Warriors hold court, they win their first two games, they go back to Portland, and then like as an emotional, again, like as a storyline.
Game three is the game that a lot of us are pegging.
I think he probably comes back in game three, and then maybe he just like goes off, but maybe he like irreparably like fucks up his leg, and then he never plays again, a la everybody else who's ever played for the Blazers.
But yeah, I mean, if Nurkic comes back, the one game everybody's talking about, if it's not game one or game two, and the other thing is people have to remember is whoever the schedule maker is, a complete asshat and decided he wanted to put like a week in between each game. So we've got a game Sunday, then we've got a game Wednesday, and Wednesday then and Saturday.
Yeah. What? I'm not used to this schedule. It's super
Like 4 days between games. It's like, whoa, what? So that's.
So one of the things, again, that Dan and I were talking about, because we were chatting before we started here, wasting all our good conversation if we could, trying to burn through it, but it was just that, like, again, from a narrative standpoint, like if you bring Nurkic back in game three, like you just punt games one and two. They're in the Oracle. Chances are you're not going to win. Like just we'll have Nurkules return and be the hero of game three, the hero of
Wheel him out freaking Willis Reed style. Like all the pomp and circumstance you could possibly imagine.
Like so, that's the way you do it if you want to have a little ceremony.
All right. So that kind of leads me to the next question can the Blazers actually win
a game or the series?
Sure. No, the series.
There's always a puncher's chance of something stupid happening.
Your boy, the editor, man, He's making bold predictions. Dave. He said six.
Hey, Dan said Blazers in six, man.
I mean, well, okay, Dame was asked, is it Blazers in six or
no,
Blazers
no,
seven?
No.
But yeah, no, I got you.
I'm talking about BlazersEdge.com.
We're talking about. We know Dave Deckard. I know it was yeah.
Mr. Deckard.
I would say the Blazers' chances of winning the series. Sorry, Blazers, if any of you happen to be listening for some reason, like 0.5%.
ESPN has them under 1%.
Really?
So okay, like
yeah, it's according to Ben Gulliver, it's the second most lopsided series based on like a net rating score in the past 10 years.
So let's say hypothetically that game one, since we talked about a hypothetical in which a Blazer got hurt, game one, KD re-hurts himself and he's like, oh, dearie me, I've got to sit. And Steph's like, oh, I'm so distraught about this that I need a personal day. And you're left with just like
Clay and Draymond.
Clay. And Iggy and Draymond,
so we get the Ian Clark game.
Yeah, like Ian Clark tends to go.
All right, so
Ian Clark podium game.
Here's a hot take. I think Ian Clark is better than CJ McCollum.
Oh God, do you have oven mitts on?
No, but I am holding a pen, and I'm not going to write that down.
Yeah, CJ is arguably the second best all around shooter in the entire NBA right now. So I'm going to go ahead and.
I do like Ian though. Like he's a nice player. He got a chance. What was it in Utah? Like that's where he first got his opportunity.
Yeah.
I could be remembering wrong, but
I think so. Or yeah, something like that. I can't remember exactly, but no, I mean, I obviously don't think he's better, but I think that they are sort of reminiscent in their games to a certain extent, just by being like undersized scorers that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That play well with their teammates and people.
It's kind of funny that we've gotten this far, and this is like the first time we're mentioning, you know, a near 25 point per game score in CJ.
CJ? Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, this is something I was looking at earlier today, just because I'm a nerd and I like to do this stuff. But CJ was 2% shy in field goal percentage of a 50-40-90 season, and that flew under the radar.
2% where?
In just overall field goal percentage.
So he's 48 from the field. 40 was it? 42. From
oh, like
three,
across the board.
I think he's 40. I want to say 41 or 40 point. No, it might just be 40 even. 42.
I thought he was 42%.
42. Anyway,
either way.
Yeah. So
I mean, this is a volume shooter.
Yeah.
He almost shot.
So
50,
he led the entire NBA in free throw percentage with I think 91.2.
Yeah.
And then he shot over 40% from three, and then 48% overall from field goal. on regular field goals, and even as if it's strictly 2-point field goals, he was over 50. But like, obviously, you take into account 3-point shots.
So yeah, basically, what we're saying here is the ridiculous level of shooting that CJ McCollum is at right now is nearly unmatched, and he is without a doubt the best mid-range shooter in the entire NBA. And again, that's not even up for debate.
Another fun fact: while we're on CJ fun facts, subscribe to CJ facts, is that I think he led the NBA in miles run.
Yeah. It's the second year in a row. He's done that.
Yeah. Really? He just, wow. Yeah,
it's crazy. This is something we've kind of compared and contrasted with. Everybody wants to talk about how the Blazers being assembled, early on, you know, Dame and CJ, how they kind of look like Monte and Steph, and how they're fast paced, high scoring offense. They get a lot of shots up, a lot of threes, a lot of pace and space. But there's a fundamental difference. And I think a lot of people look at the Golden State Warriors and still think of them as a pick and roll team. They're nowhere near the level of pick and roll on a play-by-play basis as the Blazers.
Right.
The Blazers run a ton more pick and roll. That is their bread and butter. Dame and CJ, pick and roll. Where Golden State makes their pay, and as Golden State fans, you'll know this, they're the best cutting team in the entire NBA.
Right.
And that's something the Blazers just don't do. Excuse me. And it's something that they don't really defend all that well. And that was something I was kind of highlighting in our preview, was the areas that Portland is really good in offensively, as good as Golden State's defense is, those are some of Golden State's weaknesses. So as good as Golden State's defense is, they aren't great on the pick and roll as compared to how they cover, you know, spot up chances, catch and shoot chances, transition, and how they eliminate a lot of transition opportunity. But the Blazers, I mean, when it's just Dame and CJ, it's easier to take them out of the pick and roll game. When you put Nurkic in there, and again, we kind of go back to that gravity, how Golden State reacts to that and how they try to cover that, you know, putting Draymond or Kevin Durant as great as defenders as both those guys are.
They're just going to put JaVale on him, man. It's going to be over.
And you're just going to put all the wingspan you can possibly find on those guys. I mean, I can see that working. But it's kind of interesting, and it kind of presents these subplots that they may not make a difference in the score line, but as for me, like I'm already like justifying things that I'm looking for because I don't plan on the Blazers, you know.
Being but so so I guess that's so I have two questions. So like, and we'll start with the micro. But so predictions on this series from both of you go.
Like
total games.
Oh, total games.
Yeah.
Blazers in three.
I'm a five games. I could be talked into six.
I'll go six. I'll say six.
The number for me, like right now, if this is,
are you saying like 3-4 or, you know, them winning at home or
no, no, I'm saying six games is in Blazers two games.
No, I know. So they win games 3 and 4.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I see,
the way I see it, I think that Golden State would win two. Blazers would come home and win one. Golden State would get their shit together for game four. They'd go back down to Oakland.
See, that's where I was
one.
Trying to talk myself into a six-game series is like, where does that second game for Portland?
Well, that's my question,
Dame has one of his Oakland games. I think the series goes back to Oakland and Dame like game has five? One of his games. Yeah, I mean, Dame's due for one of his Oakland games, right?
And then the Warriors close it out in Portland in game six.
That's kind of what that's where I want. Like, if I'm Vegas, in my head, 5.5 is the number.
Yeah, for me, it's 4.5. Yeah,
is it?
Well, for me, I don't know what Vegas
is.
It's
hard to sweep the NBA. Like, it's just so hard.
You heard it here. Well, I'm not gonna say you heard it here first. You heard it here probably 45th if you're listening to a million podcasts or a million pundits saying a million things. Like Barkley, I know, said it already. Let's say a 6-game series, cement it. Words in stone. David said it. 4-2 Golden State.
I mean,
Blazers win.
This would be the biggest upset in NBA history if the Blazers won this series.
It'd be pretty awesome, though.
I mean, this is bigger than the We Believe team.
I think you're right, only because of the star power on the Warriors. That Mavericks team was
the biggest
was,
like superstar team ever constructed in the history of basketball.
Yeah, yeah. This would be a bigger upset. I guess you're right. I just like from a Warriors fan perspective that We Believe just felt.
That's hard to take away.
So it's like, and I don't think that there's the same, because there were so many elements of that, you know, and the fact that, you know, Don Nelson used to work there and his son was still the GM or whatever in charge of putting the team together. And like, all those, and the fact that Barron and Stack Jackson, all those guys just didn't, and Matty Barnes, who's back on the team now, like, it was just such a gritty underdog team. Like, I don't feel like Portland, because they've been there before. That's why it wouldn't be that big of an upset. Like, they went to the second round last year. Like, they've been in the playoffs.
They stumbled into it.
Yeah, I know. I know they stumbled into it, but I'm just saying, like, the Warriors hadn't done shit for forever. Like, they literally, there was a, what was it, third? I'd have to look this up. There was a maybe like 20 some odd year stretch where they made the playoffs once, and that one year was We Believe, you know? And they made the second round, and then they like challenged Utah.
Portland's been mediocre for a lot longer.
I've got another small tangent for you just because you reminded me of this.
Oh, please, yeah.
Nifty fact. The Seattle Supersonics have been to the playoffs more recently than the Timberwolves.
I saw that. Yeah, no, I did see that. And actually, our mutual friend David Naylor, who writes for Canis Hoopus, which is the Timberwolves blog, I definitely made sure that we talked about that. Let's just say that.
Just for fun. Let's. Do we know his Twitter handle? If not, we can just say look him
up.
Yeah,
it's at Prof Naylor. It's P-R-O-F Naylor.
All right, everyone listening, go follow him. He's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. But so one of my further question is like, so that was in a micro sense, like this playoff series. In a macro sense, what are the Blazers doing? Like, what they have that big three now with Lillard, McCollum, and I hopefully Nurkic if he can stay healthy. Like, what is the future of Portland?
Oh man, we almost need Eric on here to talk about the luxury tax. So Portland is going to have to, I would say they have to package one of their, at least one of their three picks. to just
Evan like, Turner or Alan Crabb yeah, has to be gone before next like, season.
They fucked up the free agency so bad money wise this year that they have to disassemble at least a little bit to even like have a fiscally responsible
future. There's no maneuverability for this franchise. For anybody who doesn't know, the Portland Trailblazers have the second highest payroll in the entire NBA right now. Yet they have
I did not know that. Wow.
They have the youngest team.
Wait, how is that even possible?
Do you want me?
Go ahead.
Okay, so let's see. Turner is getting $75 million over 4 years. Crabb is getting $70 million over 4 years. Myers is getting $41 million over 4 years. How much is Harkless? He's getting $40 million.
They dished out $500 million.
Well, and CJ's max extension kicks in here.
And that's 25.7 escalating to 28.
Yeah.
Damian Lillard's max deal kicked in. That's 24 escalating to 27. Yeah, well
he's already getting paid that. So the only players on roster really that are on good deals are Aminu, Ed Davis, anyone who's
on
like,
a rookie deal.
Yeah, on a rookie deal. Vonleh's almost up though.
Yeah, so Vonleh comes up next year. Nurkic comes up the year after that. So when you look at guys that you want to keep on those young deals that are so viable, that's Pat Connaughton, who's got, I think, a team option left.
Well, okay, but see, if you look, let's say hypothetically the Blazers draft three players with their three picks and they keep them.
They have to get rid of Pat Connaughton, Festus Ezeli, and Tim Quarterman.
Yeah. Those are the only three that they can, really.
Because every other contract is guaranteed. The Blazers have 12 guaranteed contracts on their roster. And we can go ahead and say this, that Festus Ezeli will not be here next year.
No, he's not going to be here. No way.
Which are, you know, man, as a Warriors fan, like, I wanted nothing for the best, nothing but the best for him.
Oh, we did like, too, but things went a lot more sideways than we ever could have imagined.
He's a good guy. So, okay, minor tangent, just because it's fun. So Festus came out to like the Boys and Girls Club in Portland late last summer, and I went out there to take pictures. And he played with the kids, he played pool, he played ping pong, he like sang a Miley Cyrus song on the little thing. He like colored with them and got out the crayons, and like he's a cool dude. He was really nice. I have one picture. I'll have to send it to you. Remind me if I forget. But like one of the kids is like, oh, I want to play ping pong. And he like stepped in to be Festus's partner. And Festus is good at ping pong. And this kid like couldn't hit anything. And he like just for a split second looked over at me and shot me a look like, ugh. And like I happened to get that picture.
I would love that picture. And I will definitely put that into the pod. If you send it, I'm going to publish this sometime tomorrow. And I'm keeping all of this in the pod, by the way. That if you send this to me, I will, if you find it, you know, no huge pressure, but I will definitely put this, like I will embed it import it.
I'm sure I have it but somewhere.
Kind of like getting back into the shit show that is Portland's financial situation. It's irreparable as far as, getting anything done without moving these guys. You just can't. And I was, for anybody who doesn't know, I was not only team tank, I was driving the tank. I am the damn tank commander because Portland needs young, good assets on rookie deals. Like that's a thing that has to happen. Mo Harkless's deal at $10 million a year is actually a very good deal.
Yeah, it's pretty solid.
I mean, Mo's turned into a very solid rotation player. So that deal's okay. And Myers Leonard in a vacuum, $10 million for a backup big man in today's NBA really isn't bad. He just needs to up his production to be more valuable. But the Crabb and Turner deals, they're inexcusable. I mean, Bram, you were in Vegas when Turner signed and you saw my meltdown firsthand. I
could not believe Portland matched.
That it was, I mean, for 3 days, you and I and everybody else in the house discussed that Portland is no way they're stupid enough to match Alan Crabb's deal. And then there's no way that the rumors to them offering Evan Turner that money were true, and it all came true. And I mean, I was in a, you know, stupor that just made no sense. But I mean, you look at the way Portland's constructed and they're so close to being in a level of luxury tax hell that they're literally going, if things continue this way, they'll be paying $3 for every dollar.
Right.
That's the luxury tax bill. And people are like, oh, it's a billionaire's money and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really affect the team. Yes, it does. It affects the team drastically in how you can make trades and what goes in and what comes out and mid-level exceptions, the types of trades you can make and the percentages that you can take back with certain amounts of money going out. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on with this that you don't want to be involved with the repeater. And the level of flexibility you have in making other deals. I mean, the reason the Blazers signed Festus is because nobody else would sign Festus because his knee was a disaster. And the Blazers needed a PR move, and they didn't have any money to do anything else.
Honestly, that was just like 11th hour. We failed to get a big man. Let's get the one that's available. And, you know, hopefully he can play. He probably won't. And then it ended up he didn't. But, like, if you look at the moves Neil made, it's like it's not even that the ones he was able to make were bad. They were. But like the ones he tried to make were also bad, if not worse.
Let's go ahead and put this. Like, let's revisit everything.
Yeah. So he tried to max Chandler Parsons.
Yes. Max Chandler Parsons.
He tried to, what was it, like 18 a year for Pau Gasol? He tried.
Yep. 18 a year for Pau Gasol. So, I mean, okay. So right there, you're talking about guys that Chandler Parsons really hasn't played this year. Pau Gasol is, you know, for the first, 4 months of the season was a shell of himself.
Yeah.
He finally started to look like more like old Pau Gasol.
Well, and is he 35 or 36?
He's old.
Like he's okay. So he's good, but 18 million a year on a team that is supposed to be like young players. I don't see it.
You know, and let's see. They missed out on Hassan Whiteside. They missed out on Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
And then
I would have been fine with Dwight, to be honest.
I would have too.
Oh man, I think Dwight on any team is just a horrible idea. I think Dwight should retire.
I mean, with Portland, I mean, signing the biggest free agent signing I think Portland has ever had. I mean,
Brian Grant.
I mean, seriously, like Portland just doesn't sign free agents. So like they have to overpay.
Excuse me, Evan Turner.
Yeah. Okay. For those that don't know, I mean, a lot of people make jokes about Evan Turner's contract, but Evan Turner himself, when he found out about this deal, called his friends, family, and teammates on the other teams who all got wide-eyed and literally laughed and said, sign the deal.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like the Blazers were bidding against everybody else for Evan Turner's services at that level. Like, he took that contract to the Boston Celtics, and Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens like, yeah, now you're good, fam. Go sign in Portland.
Well, and this is where I get irritated with Portland fans. Sorry, Portland fans, I love you. But it's just like, people look at him and it's like, we're paying him, you know, 17, 18 million and he's not producing. They're like, oh man, like you're not going to turn Evan Turner into a different player by paying him what you should be paying a player of a higher caliber. And that's nothing against Evan. Like Evan's been solid for us, especially once he found his groove and like, he's an awesome dude. But like, it's really hard to see people like vilifying players just based on the money they're earning and what they're producing on the
court.
And not
vilifying Neil O'Shea for making stupid.
Yeah. Offers. Oh, that's what drives me crazy. It's like, what was it on Twitter? Someone the other day was talking to me. Actually, there's a big long thread about this, but don't worry about that. About like Myers Leonard, because he takes a lot of shit. And someone had said, like, oh, they ordered a hamburger and got an old shoe. Well, like, no, you walked into a shoe store and ordered a hamburger. Like, that's different, you know? He's not going to be...
You're paying him, he's not going to do something differently.
Yeah, like, he's still Myers, and he's having a down season. That's, like, I don't think anyone would argue that he's had a spectacular year, but, like, to be like, oh, where's this $10 million a year player that we expected to come in and crush it? It's like, well, I mean, he's trying. And he has a pretty small role on the team, to be honest.
Yeah. So, and I know this has been an awful long tangent about money and Portland, but like this is the situation in that in late December and early January, this was a team that was 11 games under 500.
Right.
I mean, like everybody wants to talk about, and they want to focus on Nurkic and Nurk fever and how great Portland was and how the Blazers had the second best record to close the season behind only the Warriors. Yes, they played phenomenal basketball, but this team, for the first 4 months of the season, no joke, played the worst defense in NBA history.
Right.
That's not, again, this is not hyperbolic. This is actual fact. Their defensive rating was a disaster. They gave up 100 points through three quarters four times in the first 3 months of the season.
Jesus, wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and let's get kind of wrap this back to Golden State.
Oh, yes.
I mean.
Is that what we're on here for?
Yeah,
I forget.
The Warriors absolutely, without a doubt, shellacked this team in every matchup. Like, there was one that where the game got somewhat close in the final score because everybody just said YOLO, and, you know, the closers were out there letting shots fly.
I really hope not everyone said YOLO. I try not to.
Yeah, I know. That was me being sarcastic. but the idea that this team is the same team that competed with the Warriors for long stretches last season is misleading, to say the least. But you can also flip it to the other side and say that this team that played Golden State earlier in the season and didn't play them in the latter half of the season with Nurkic is vastly different. So to me, that's what's going to be really interesting, is because the team that played Golden State early in the season didn't give a shit. I mean, I have not seen a Blazers team care less in my time as a fan than I did in the first 4 months of the season. Have you?
I mean, so like, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus because all the guys work really hard. I think they cared. But, like, the effort, man, like, if we're being honest, it wasn't there for a large chunk of the season.
I mean, that's not a Portland thing. Like, if you want to talk about Portland basketball, and not just, like, this season or last season, like, if you're talking about franchises in general, this city and this team and this franchise has always prided itself on the workmanlike effort. That's – if you look at the championship-contending teams – the Drexler eras, the Walton eras, even the late 90s era teams, even though they had stars, they were all lunch pail and helmet type teams, every single one of them. So when that became an issue for this team, it was really, really weird. And I think it's going to be the interesting thing for both me and, you know, the rest of Portland fans and Portland media to kind of take in this series. Because which one of these teams shows up, the team that just got absolutely rolled in those first couple of matchups, or the team that's been, again, one of the best teams in the NBA for the past, you know, 60 days.
And I think that that's such an interesting dynamic that you sort of just brought up, is that, you know, Portland, unlike the Bay Area, like Portland, the Blazers are it, man, you know? Like, the Blazers encapsulate the entirety of what it means to be a sports fan, other than the Timbers or whatever the yeah. MLS team is.
And here's the ironic part. The Timbers have won a title more recently than the Blazers.
Right.
To be honest, I don't follow
but
soccer.
It's just something, you know, and having spent, like, quite a bit of time in Portland and having a lot of friends who live in Portland, including you guys and a bunch of old family friends and everything, and having grown up on the West Coast, too, as well. Like, I mean, there's something about that this is it. Like, the Blazers are the talk of the town. I mean, it's everybody.
Oh, it's 24/7 Blazers.
It's 24/7 Blazers. And even, like, you know, the coverage that you guys are able to provide at Blazers Edge and everything, like, it just strikes a nerve because there's nothing else that people want to talk about, because there is nothing else to talk about as far as sports go, you know? And, you know, and wanting – I think that's a really interesting conversation that we could easily talk about for another 50 minutes, but, like, wanting the team to sort of mirror the image that you have in your mind of the town that you live in, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're talking about the Blazers being, like, a, you know, hard hat, like, working hard, like, really, you know, and at the same time being, like, very open, very approachable, very, like, hopefully friendly. I mean, I think that those are all the – those are all the qualities of Portland that I think about when I think about them. And for me, like, the funny thing is, like, the Warriors, when I was a kid, the Bay Area, I mean, there were aspects of it that were really glitzy, but most of those were reserved for the Niners or the Giants or whatever. And the Warriors were, like, this, like, weird little brother that, like, all the nerds and, like,
they were the Clippers of the Bay.
Yeah, they were the Clippers of the Bay, like, to a certain extent, except they were, like, even way worse than the Clippers, at least, like, record-wise. And they had a bad owner, and, like, nobody, I mean, the people who were, they were still selling out because people really cared. But now that's transitioned into, like, they're the Silicon Valley team. I mean, they, like, really, like, Andre Iguodala has come in. He has, like, massive investments in Silicon Valley. Joe Lacob is an investment banker, whatever, however that hedge fund manager shit, whatever, have whatever that is. And like
highly technical term.
Yeah, that's a scientific term for terminology for what he does. And like all the people you see sitting courtside, like are you know, are tech people. And
Google.
It's great. I mean, it's great for the team. It's they have this influx of cash. Obviously, like they took those sort of business ideals and went out and got Kevin Durant and like applied all this stuff and just showed him how he could, you know, probably triple his investment and whatever terminology that they probably dropped on him about, like, you know, the difference between living in the Bay Area and living in Oklahoma City, which is like a legit difference. And he could be making a lot less money on the basketball court and be making four times as much money in investments and everything, you know. And yeah, so
it's definitely a weird dynamic when you take a look at how things have transitioned, and that it's kind of weird how we've gotten to this point. But the one thing I think the Blazers can be secure with is the, even though some of the image and the styling of the team has changed under Neil O'Shea and McGowan's direction, Paul Allen's still the owner, and right, nothing on this franchise gets done that means any bit of difference without PA's sign off.
Which is also funny though, because like he's like the OG tech guy. So like, why do we get the tech guys who just want to do like flashy tech shit with it, with like the cranes dancing? Did you guys see that?
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's like Paul Allen is like actually tech guy. It's like, come on, man. Like, I mean, and again, like I'm not really throwing shade at Laker because like he brought a championship to us for the first time since 70 whatever year it was that I should know off the top of my head, but I don't. And also, you know, we're minutes away in multiple different games from not blowing a 3-1 lead in the finals last year. And,
here's a prop bet for you. Over under three. How many behind the back passes does Steph Curry throw out?
Oh God.
In the first round.
In the first round?
Just the first round. It's against Portland. How cute do you think he gets?
So over under is three. I'm going to go with one.
Yeah, just one, huh? Oh man.
Well, just to
keep going
to
relax.
Just to keep the 3-1 symmetry together.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, I at least for me, I can't speak for David. When I look at this series, I don't care. let me just throw that out there. I love this team.
Not even sick, and you got me coughing.
I love this team. I love this franchise. I'm an LA guy who fell in love with Portland when I moved here as a kid, but I tuned out when they stopped caring midseason. And I if they somehow like went on a freak run and like won the NBA title this year, it would ring hollow to me because of how ridiculous things got.
Right.
I mean, it was that bad. Like I was so disenfranchised with this particular team. Like it was difficult. I haven't missed a game in 8 years. It was physically painful for me to write analysis on post game. Like you can only write lazy effort and don't give a shit attitude so many times.
Right.
When it just happens over and over and over again. And so for me, I was telling David earlier in the year, I just didn't care about this season. Like come December, I had already just tuned out and just was like, okay, this season's whatever, whatever comes out of it, great. But I'm already looking forward to the draft and what they do in the off season to make this team better and more effective for the future.
For me personally, so I would say like, I'm not disenfranchised per se. This definitely isn't my favorite iteration of the Trailblazers. I don't want to say I gave up on the season. I definitely thought that, what was it? There came a point where they were like 13, 14 games behind, under 500 or something like that.
11, yeah.
Yeah, 11 was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it felt like 20. And I was just looking at that like, damn, man, like this is really what came of this big, like last year they weren't supposed to be good. And it turns out that they surprised everyone. And then suddenly this year people were like, all right, expectations, they're going to be a top, you know, six seed or higher. They're going to be a 45 win team. And like, I think I partially bought into that. I think I had a floor of 42 and a ceiling of 48, which, you know, they didn't quite meet, but they needed to do some gymnastics to get there anyway, because they needed to make that Nurkic deal. The way the team looked going into that, like, man, there just wasn't a lot to root for. Wasn't a lot to watch. It was hard.
like for a small moment there, we felt what it was like to be a New York Knicks fan.
Oh, hey, dude, you know nothing.
I am a New York Knicks fan.
You know nothing, Jon Snow. Nothing will prepare you for the hell that is. Oh, Jesus, I just totally forgot his name. That asshole. What's his name?
Carmelo?
Dolan? No, Dolan. Yeah, James Dolan.
Oh, yeah. Dolan. Yeah. I was like,
at least you have a good owner, man.
Yes,
yeah. And at least, oh, so 2 points. At least you have a good owner, and at least you don't have Carmelo Anthony on your team. Everything else is just like, you're fine. But all right. So I feel like somehow that's where we should end it, with just like some blasphemous anti-Knicks sort of stuff, which isn't blasphemous because it's true. But anyways, once again,
I just want to cut in just because earlier I alluded to a quote from Evan Turner in which there was swearing.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like there may be curiosity if I leave that unattended. So one of the things ET said the other day, he was talking about Iguodala.
Mm.
So, you know, because of the upcoming series. And this just made me laugh because our digital reporter, Trailblazers digital reporter, Casey Holdall, was talking to him about his relationship with Iggy. He said, you know, was he a good vet to you? And Evan said, no, he is an asshole. He's like, but it's okay because I was an asshole. When you get two guys that are assholes and look at each other like, man, that guy's a huge asshole. And they were just like, you know what? We should be friends.
Yeah.
And he's like, he introduces him to friends like, oh, don't mind him. He's an asshole. So
it's the same way David introduces me.
Yeah, essentially. So I just thought that was kind of funny. You know, they're still like, they're close. They're, you know, he's his guy, I think is what he said. But
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Iguodala has special relationships with many different players. I've like heard a lot of stories sort of about Iguodala and the way that he deals with it. But anyways, so this has been yet another enlightening, spirited conversation on Golden State of Mindcast, which today could have easily doubled as Blazers Edge of Podcast. and I thank you guys so very much for coming on. We're super looking forward to the series. If anything weird or crazy or drastic happens, I'm sure that we'll have you guys back on and to hash it out. But once again, this has been Dan Marang, which is at D Marang, at D M A R A N G on the old Twitter sphere. And the secondary voice, or the second, not the secondary. That sounds
no,
like
no,
I'm insulting
the secondary
me,
voice.
The lesser.
The other
Blazers. The guy who talks slightly less.
Yeah, that one. David McKay, at David McKay MBA, which is McKay, if you're wondering, is M-A-C-K-A-Y MBA. Not that MBA is naturally embedded into his name, but I think that if he had a choice, he probably would.
Makes it harder option. To pronounce.
Yeah. David McKay. It like has a nice like sort of like flow to it if you just let it
it's
fall
like David McKayba.
Yeah, McKayba. And once again, I'm Bram Kinchelow.
That sounds pretty good.
At Bram Kinchelow on Twitter. You've been listening to Golden State of Mindcast. We've had a blast. We will be publishing this hopefully on a Friday or maybe a Saturday. And the playoffs start Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern Coast time, 12:30 p.m. Pacific time for both the Portland fans and the Golden State fans who are mostly on the West Coast. And thanks for stopping by. And Dan and David, thanks very much for stopping by. We had a blast, man. So I'll talk again soon.
Yeah, see you later.
All right. Cheers.
Say hi to Spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.